I Hate the News is the weekly news bulletin from I Hate Politics podcast, a show about a human activity we love to hate. I'm Sunil Dasgupta. The week of September 10th, 2024. DC and Maryland attorneys general sue three Montgomery County gun dealers for making straw gun sales. Maryland House Environment and Transportation Committee Chair Mark Corman reacts to the state's capital budget draft for transportation projects. Fairfax County to start a bus route from Tyson's Corner to Bethesda going over the American Legion Bridge. Montgomery County announces partnership with Instacart to deliver groceries to families who fall in the SNAP gap. That is, they make too much money for federal government food assistance, but not enough to live comfortably in the county. And more. Stay with us.
I Hate Politics is brought to you by UMBC's Political Science Program. If your goal is to make a meaningful impact with a career in local, state, or federal government, discover what this degree can do for you. Learn more at shadygrove.umbc.edu.
I Hate Politics is a podcast about our neighborhoods, workplaces, schools and streets, and our local governments as they function in diverse and democratic societies. This means our politics are messy, dirty, sometimes corrupt, with often self-serving politicians. But no matter how much we may hate politics, we are never exempt from it, even when we refuse to participate. In fact, the purpose of politics is to keep society functioning precisely when we don't agree with each other, like now. Music for this episode comes from Washington, D.C. area post-punk rock band Gray Swift. Mike Mangiaricino on guitar and vocals, Fabrizio Cariani on guitar and backing vocals, Evan Hurd on bass, and Chris Blackburn on the drums. The songs come from their album, Closure Ends. DC and Maryland attorneys general have sued three Rockville gun shops for ignoring red flags and selling several handguns to a straw buyer in violation of federal and state law. Engage Armaments on Goody Road, Atlantic Guns on Rockville Pike across from King Farm, and United Gun Shop on Randolph near Parklawn Drive. The complaint alleges that the three gun shops sold at least 34 handguns to Demetrius Minor, who passed the guns to his relative Donald Willis, a DC resident with a record of violent felonies. Nine of those guns were recovered from crime scenes in DC and suburban Maryland. An investigation report from the Maryland Attorney General's office identified all three gun shops as the top three retailers in the state of traced crime guns recovered in Maryland between August 2020 and July 2021. All three gun shops are federally licensed and required to follow federal and state law, including not participating in straw gun sales. Engage Armaments on Goody Road sold 25 guns to Demetrius Minor. United Gun Shop sold 5. And Atlantic Guns sold 4. The lawsuit will be heard in Montgomery County Circuit Court. Maryland's budget is organized in two large categories: transportation and everything else. The Transportation Trust Fund, which is the transportation side of things, is estimated to be building toward a $3 billion gap between revenue and spending. The everything else category has a similar problem, but not quite as large. Transportation spending is further divided into three major categories: debt service on what's already been borrowed, operating expenses, in particular, the state runs transit in Baltimore City and MARC trains, as well as pays for its share of Washington Metro operating expenses. And then there is capital investment, which is bundled in a six-year rolling plan called the Consolidated Transportation Program. The Maryland Department of Transportation released its draft of the Consolidated Transportation Program for 2025 and the out years. I asked the State House Environment and Transportation Committee Chair, Mark Korman, what he thought.
The Capital Transportation Program, as it exists today, has a $1.3 billion shortfall. But that's just as it kind of like exists today. That doesn't include many of the aspirational things people want in the future. But there's a lot of things deferred or on hold. And so that's actually a problem, because I think we probably do, if we're going to get our arms around this, do need to make some projects gone, right, to use your term, and figure out what it is we really want to do. The Department of Transportation keeps trying to press pause, saying we'll come back later and do these things. And I don't think that's realistic. I think we actually need to use the edit button, not just the pause button.
The American Legion Bridge is deferred, paused, gone.
Yeah, I mean, I would just say the American Legion Bridge is a little bit more on what I would call the aspirational side of the budget. That was not really programmed into the CTP. The money that was programmed into the CTP was small planning potatoes. It was not really the money we would need for, say, a match to a federal grant to actually replace the American Legion Bridge in whatever form you think that should happen, or even just rehabilitated. But some of the things that were actually kind of more imminent that are now being deferred, one is the Department of Transportation had publicly said they were prepared to announce increased service on the Brunswick line. That is now being deferred. And the reason for that is because they felt that that was going to come with some longer term capital commitments that they're not prepared to do. Another example in our county is Montgomery Hills and Georgia Avenue, where there's been this long-term effort to make sort of a more walkable area on Georgia Avenue around the Beltway. That project was finally actually getting a little bit of oxygen in progress, and now that's on pause. And some other big ones that are relevant to the state, I-81 in Western Maryland, which is a little bit of a safety issue, has been an ongoing project. The next phase of the kind of widening and separating there to help the truck freight traffic get through, that's on hold. There's a number of other projects like that that are sort of in the pause position. Again, all of those might be good projects, but there's hundreds of other projects in the program that need to sort of be considered about whether or not, you know, they'll ever be able to continue.
What about the Purple Line?
Yeah, so the Purple Line and other projects that are under construction currently continue, right? There's not a shovel that's already in the ground that we are taking out of the ground, and that's true anywhere. The other kind of three things that are kind of do relatively well in this budget, actually four things I should mention. So one is the Key Bridge, which of course we hope the federal government will largely pay for. The port and the airport do pretty well, and that's because there's a lot of federal laws about how their money has to sort of flow back to them. And then the other thing that's really important is the what's called highway user revenue and local operated transit systems, HUR and LOTS for the wonks out there. And these are kind of local aid programs. It's the county's and municipality's share of transportation revenue. That was on the chopping block last year. Thanks to some tough actions we took, you know, there's enough revenue this year to not put those in the chopping block. So those are protected. But other than that, almost everything else takes it on the chin in one form or another.
This is ultimately a revenue problem. What are you hearing from the commission that is set up to figure out the path forward?
Last year, the House came up with a plan on transportation, and that included actually ending that commission that you're describing, which had met, you know, last year and come up with a few ideas, but not nearly enough. We passed that plan over to the Senate, and they came back with a much smaller chunk of that, a much lower amount, which, you know, ultimately to put the budget to bed, you know, we did, recognizing we'd have to come back and do more. And they wanted to keep the commission alive. And that commission has not met since then. So I'm on that commission. I'm happy to go to, you know, almost any meeting, but that commission hasn't met. So I'm not sure that that commission is coming up with, you know, ideas if we're not meeting to solve this problem. So it'll be great if the, you know, if we can get that going again, or if the Senate or the governor or others, you know, again, want to come up with things that look at both sides of the equation, and not just the revenue, but also what it is we want to get out of that revenue. I look at the blueprint as a little bit of an example. I don't want to do anything. I don't expect we'll do anything as comprehensive as the blueprint. But something that people fail to understand about the blueprint was it wasn't just about how much we're spending, but what we're spending it on, right? Those five pillars of the blueprint are about the kind of outcomes we want. What are we buying for our money? Not just let's spend more money.
Mark Korman, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
That's the big transportation news. The American Legion Bridge rebuild and the Baltimore Red Line now appear further off in the horizon. Purple Line and Key Bridge moving forward. And the state does not have a long-term plan to address the gap in the Transportation Trust Fund. In smaller transportation news, Fairfax County is going to run a public bus from Tyson's Corner to Bethesda over the same sometimes unpassable American Legion Bridge. Several coach and charter buses ply their route for companies trying to help out their employees, but there is no transit option on the Capitol Beltway. The only option really is to take the Metro into DC and the Orange Line to Tyson's. Fairfax Connector used to run a bus like this more than 10 years ago, but ended the route due to lack of passengers. Here is take two on Route 798 from Fairfax transportation planner Kyle Davis, who it turns out himself lives in Baltimore and takes transit to work a couple of times a week.
This route is going to start off at the Tyson's West Park facility, and then it's going to serve the Tyson's Metro Rail Station, which is off of the Silver Line. And then from there, it will also serve Montgomery Mall, Rockville Pike, directly across from NIH and Walter Reed. It won't actually go into the loop itself, but it will serve Rockville Pike. There's a pair of existing stops there that it will serve. And then it will serve downtown Bethesda at the intersection of Montgomery Lane and East Lane. So just outside of the Metro Rail Station.
How long have you been planning this?
So we've been planning this route for several years. This is something that came out of a study between the Virginia Department of Rail and Public Transportation and the Maryland Department of Transportation. So they studied the feasibility of a route between these two activity centers, Tyson's and Bethesda. You've got tens of thousands of jobs in both locations. So it really does make sense that these two densely populated activity centers would have some demand to be connected via public transportation, especially considering all of the traffic that's going over the American Legion Bridge. You have many people who live in Maryland and work in Tyson's and vice versa.
What does the study show about ridership expectations?
About 400 riders per day. Certainly not, you know, from day one. This will require time to develop ridership. It'll require time for the market to mature. Yeah, we just want to get the word out there that there is an alternative to sort of white knuckling over the American Legion Bridge.
Yeah, white knuckle is the word for it. What is the initial schedule?
Route 798, it is only going to operate during the rush hours. It is going to operate between 5:50 and 9:50 during the morning in the AM, and then from 3:30 PM to 6:07 in the PM in the afternoon.
And these leave every 20 minutes? What?
Every 20 to 40 minutes.
What is the expected time that the bus is going to take between Bethesda and Tyson's and, you know, both ways?
It'll take about 1 hour to make the trip.
When do you start?
September 16th, 2024.
Right around the corner. Kyle Davis, thank you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Montgomery County has announced a novel partnership with Instacart to help residents who do not qualify for federal food assistance but are nevertheless struggling in the county from high living costs. Heather Breskin, the director of the county's Office of Food Systems Resilience, explains.
Yeah, so this is a brand new program that was coming out of a recommendation from the county's strategic plan to end childhood hunger. And one of the highlights of the report was really underscoring how so many families in our county live below the self-sufficiency standard and in something that we call the SNAP gap. So the high cost of living in our county means that a typical family of four needs over $100,000 a year in income to cover their basic costs of living: childcare, healthcare, food, housing, all of the basic amenities of everyday life. And so these families may make too much to qualify for benefits like SNAP, so the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, which used to be referred to as food stamps. So that same family of four, if they earn more than about $50,000 a year, they don't qualify for those benefits. And so we have an estimated 300,000 residents representing over 70,000 kids that fall below the self-sufficiency standard. And we estimate that there are 36,000 children that live in households that fall into that SNAP gap. So MC Grocery's program was designed specifically to support these families that fall into the SNAP gap. So we have worked with the Department of Health and Human Services to identify 2,000 families with representing approximately 4,000 children who meet the basic qualifications for this program. So they fall below the 400% of the federal poverty level, which is basically that self-sufficiency standard. They have at least one child at the age of 18 or younger, and they are not currently participating or receiving SNAP. And so we invited these families to participate in this new program, which provides $100 per child per month, up to $400 per month for a full year to shop on Instacart. And so Instacart has over 20 different retail banners, so different grocery stores that they work with in Montgomery County, representing over 80 different stores. And so these families can use these credits to order food at any one of these stores.
So what is Instacart's role in this? Are they going to waive their fees, or how does that all work?
So Instacart has set up a special platform called Fresh Funds. And so this is their largest partnership to date with a government entity for use of this program. It has a variety of flexibilities. They were one of the first online vendors to accept SNAP for online grocery purchases, which was a really big step and has been a big development in the SNAP space over the past few years. And so what this means is Instacart has set up a special storefront just for MC Grocery's participants that defines which foods and beverages are approved for purchase with their credits. So it is specific to designated products, but those products reflect the cultural diversity and food preferences of our residents, as well as a wide variety of nutritious shelf-stable products, as well as produce. And so Instacart creates this platform and manages the purchases and runs the entire back end of the program. And this is a component of their Instacart Health program, which is a new strategy to make these types of resources and programs more accessible to the broader community. The MC Groceries pays for the fees.
The total cost of the program to the county, what is that?
So there was $1.8 million that were appropriated in December of 2023 for this purpose. And so that is the initial budget for the program, although there are additional funds for a retail access program in the FY25 budget as well.
Heather Breskin, thank you.
It's so nice to be with you. Thank you.
This school year, Montgomery County Public Schools introduced girls flag football as a high school sport. This is the second year for girls flag football statewide, and Montgomery County joins Baltimore City, Frederick, and Washington counties. The effort has been supported by the Baltimore Ravens and Under Armour, the athletic clothing company, which provides grants for equipment and uniforms and coaching stipends. Most schools lag on Title IX equality between girls and boys in athletics. The season kicked off statewide last Wednesday. In Montgomery County, all teams participated in opening ceremonies at four different high school stadiums, and then the teams took the field for game time. I spoke with Bethesda Chevy Chase High School coach Stephanie Lizama.
growing up in the county, I actually got into sports. I was playing lacrosse when I was back in high school. I'm a Seneca Valley High School alumni. So when this opportunity kind of came to the county, you know, being the first sport ever to be offered for girls, and especially the objective being bringing girls that have never played a sport, which is very exciting because I guess I love to empower girls into anything that they have never tried, just especially like even from computer science to engineering. And I also kind of dealt into a 5-versus-5 co-ed flag football, and I just really loved it. So I just kind of wanted to continue it. So I came back to coaching, and this is where I am now.
Have you all been preparing for the season all summer?
So we had a month in July that we could have some practices. So we offered a free week camp for the girls. The Ravens also offer some free clinics throughout the county. And then we had our tryouts and then started scrimmaging each other right after.
How many girls have signed up at BCC?
The tryouts were tough. We had about 46 girls trying out. Our team is composed of 30 girls, so that's even still a big number.
So you had to cut people?
Yes.
Do you have a JV team?
We don't. So it is only varsity offered throughout the county.
And every high school in the county now has a girls flag football team?
Everyone's participating in it. Some teams have more players, some don't. There's not really a regulation. There was 30 jerseys for me to give out, so I gave them all out.
Where did the jerseys come from? Under Armour?
Yeah, so the Ravens partner up, they were with Under Armour and then USA Football. And they just kind of donated some of the materials that we are using for training.
So you had your first game last Wednesday. How did you do?
I have to say it was a learning experience for our girls. It was really nervous. They were really nervous, but they're excited to be out there. Even though we didn't take the win, we made history. You know, it was the first time stepping out and onto that field, playing each other. And they definitely learned from it. And yes, on Friday, we got our video. So we were rewatching it today at lunch. So it was kind of nice to see that. And especially since the new video software that they're using in the county allows them to kind of zoom in, pause, and slow down, makes it really official. They're excited for the next game.
But who was the opposing team?
It was Damascus. Damascus took the win.
Oh my goodness. You got the monster team, huh?
Yes.
So you have about a total of 600 girls signed up all over the county?
Yes. Yeah. It's a lot of them.
Coach Lizama, thank you and good luck in the season.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's easy to get to the games. You can find a link to the schedule in the show notes. That's all for this episode. Be sure to check out our feature interview series that comes out Friday mornings. I Hate Politics is produced by me, Sunil Dasgupta, an assistant producer, Adama Gay, with support from the University of Maryland, Baltimore County. I direct UMBC's political science program at the universities of Shady Grove in Montgomery County, where, among other things, we explore and learn about politics, government, and society close to home. Music for this episode comes from Washington, D.C. area post-punk rock band Gray Swift. Mike Mangiaricino on guitar and vocals. Fabrizio Cariani on guitar and backing vocals. Evan Hurd on bass. And Chris Blackburn on the drums. The songs come from their album, Closure Ends.